from the heart of our nation's capital, this is Washington Watch Weekend Edition. Now, here's your host, David Salkeld.
Greetings, fellow patriots. I am David Salkeld, and I'm a constitutional conservative, Christian husband, and homeschool dad. I hope you're enjoying this first weekend of August. Coming up a little later in the show, we'll hear from Senator Lindsey Graham as he talks with FRC President Tony Perkins about Turkey and the National Defense Authorization Act. Also, Representative Mike Johnson is here to talk about the latest threat to the tax-exempt status of many churches and nonprofits. But first, Attorney General Jeff Sessions announced on Monday morning the creation of a new Religious Liberty Task Force, and shortly after that announcement, the Attorney General joined Tony Perkins to talk about it.
Attorney General, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Thank you, Tony. It's good to talk to you.
Well, was the timing intentional that on the heels of talking about international religious freedom that under your leadership of the Department of Justice tasked by the president to ensure that the federal government, the agencies within the federal government are respecting religious liberty, that you made your announcement this week?
Well, it's been part of what we're planning to do. The president, as part of his commitment to protect religious liberty, which I believe he's honored, he directed me and the Department of Justice to develop a religious liberty memorandum that goes to all the government agencies and that directs them that they are not to discriminate against people improperly. It sets forth legal principles about how and what the government can do as it impacts the free exercise of religion in America, and we're real pleased with it. We got really good comments and support from people, students of religious liberty who have supported it, and we're excited about that. And so this task force will really be designed to make sure that we're following through, not to lose momentum, and to ensure that every agency, even down into the sub-agencies that issue guidance and rules and regulations, are doing so consistent with religious liberty.
Well, and I applaud you, Mr. Sessions, for doing that, because I think it is extremely important. It is our first freedom. If we cannot uphold religious freedom, we stand at risk of losing all of the other freedoms.
Tony, you're right. I mean, you know, they talk about the First Amendment and free speech, but the First Amendment commences with the freedom of religion. Congress shall make no law respecting the establishment of a religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. That comes before speech in the First Amendment.
Right. It's a fundamental and the media.
Right. You know, our founders, I just went back and read the religious freedom statute of religious freedom in Virginia that Jefferson and Madison worked on, and Madison's writings some years later in a debate over law of the remonstrance. But they make clear that your freedom of religion, your right to worship as you see fit, pre-exists the state. It is not subject to control by the state. That's what they had understood in the First Amendment.
Right.
And that's the
right way
we've understood this since the beginning of this republic, except in recent decades.
Right.
We've seen an erosion of that that I think is pretty significant. I'm sure you feel the same way, that something is going awry, and we're pushing back to try to restore the classic respect for men and women of faith that was enshrined in our Constitution and laws.
And you talk about that classic respect. It is also of the classical notion of worship and the freedom of worship, which encompassed every aspect of life, that it was not just what happened within the four walls of a church, but it was how one raised their children, how they conducted business in the marketplace. And so as in the Christian tradition, we see our work, everything about us, as being a part of that worship.
Well, I couldn't agree more. And the Constitution gives us the right to speak, but it also, when it comes to religion, it says you can't prohibit the free exercise of our religious beliefs. That's what's, I think, been lost. People have emphasized the prohibition on establishing a national church, but they haven't emphasized sufficiently and have forgotten the guarantee that you can freely exercise your religion. And when the government sets policies and rules and imposes controls over little sisters of the poor, for example, requiring them to violate deeply held religious beliefs for no good reason, then I think we can say the government has overreached. And we were proud to push back on behalf of the little sisters of the poor and our work.
Well, Mr. Attorney General, I will say that I cannot think of anything more important than preserving and protecting and promoting that fundamental freedom of religion. And if America will lead the way, it'll have an impact around the globe. And I want to applaud you for your efforts.
Well, thank you. We're going to stay at it. And we want every minister and every Christian and every person of any other faith to feel like that they can express themselves and within the constitutional provisions exercise their religion freely.
All right. Thanks so much, Attorney General, for joining us this afternoon.
Thank you.
You can find out more about Attorney General Sessions as well as the Religious Liberty Task Force when you head over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, I want to invite you to be a part of keeping Washington Watch on the air. Your involvement through notes of encouragement, prayer, and your financial support are vital as we bring you this program week after week. Simply go to TonyPerkins.com and drop us a line or make a contribution. Again, that's TonyPerkins.com.
Let's keep the momentum going in this fall's election by voting for your values. If you're like me, you care a lot about where our culture is headed. And now is the time to stand for biblical truth and fight for faith, family, and freedom in the public square. To be equipped for this mission, mark your calendars for the Values Voter Summit on September 21st through the 23rd in Washington, D.C. Invited and confirmed speakers include Donald Trump, Mike Pence, Paul Ryan, Kirk Cameron, Dana Lash, and Ben Carson. Visit valuesvotersummit.org or call 1-877-372-2808 for more information.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm your host, David Salkeld. As you may have seen in the news, the U.S. government is slapping sanctions on Turkey's justice and interior ministers over what it says are false charges against American pastor Andrew Brunson. Here to discuss these sanctions and the National Defense Authorization Act for 2019 is Senator Lindsey Graham of South Carolina.
Senator Graham, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Well, can you believe the Senate is so efficient?
Well, it is a new day. I mean, you're ahead of the House in appropriations bills.
So Mitch McConnell and Shelby and, you know, we are trying to get back in the appropriations business. I think the president was right to scold us for sending him this one big giant spending bill. And, you know, we're getting back to a traditional way of doing business, passing the 12 bills, as many as we can separately, so you know what's in them and we can have better oversight of the government. So Senator McConnell and Shelby are doing a good job.
Well, you mentioned the president's pushing putting the pressure because I think members of the Senate
that helped a lot
understand that he means business.
Yeah, I don't blame him one bit. You know, it's we haven't really done the appropriations process in like 30 years. So I think we can get up to 9 of the 12 bills done, and that would be good government, and you'll know what's in it. But the National Defense Authorization Act, named after John McCain, is $717 billion. 24,000 more men and women in the military. We need more people because the threats are greater. More equipment, more planes, more ships, more tanks, more training, and the largest pay raise for our military in almost a decade. So appreciate President Trump helping us there.
Well, and just a little bit of trivia here. The financial services bill, which is a part of a reorganization that took place, this is the first time the Senate's passed that since the reorganization back in 2007. So, I mean, this is kind of a new day for the Senate.
we're doing what people expect us to do, which is, you know, our Democratic friends have finally actually worked with us a bit. You know, we're having to do things they want us to do, and they're having to do a lot of things we want them to do, and we're getting these bills cranked out. And, you know, from a spending point of view, we're spending at 2010 levels on the non-defense budget, and we're finally getting the military budget you know, it was hollowed out. We're trying to restore it. So it's all good. And we're going to have a Supreme Court justice another one on the court, I think, by the middle of October. That'd be good, too.
So you do think it will happen before the election?
Yeah, I'm, you know, unless there's some bombshell out there, yes. I mean, we're giving them almost a million documents. The most anyone's ever been provided was 170,000 in Kagan's case. Kavanaugh's got 306 opinions to look at. So, you know, there'll always be one more document they want. They're all going to vote no, except the Democrats are in seats where it's to their political advantage to vote yes. He's highly qualified, one of the most qualified conservative justices in the country, well done by President Trump. And unfortunately, we're down to the point in time where people vote on Supreme Court nominations based on base politics more than qualification.
And you've sat down and spoken with him?
A lot. I told him, get ready. It's nothing about you. They're going to try to come after you every way they can. We're going to be there to help you. I'm not hiding the fact that I'm going to vote for him. I like the list submitted by the president to the voters before the election. You know, the one thing it said about President Trump, he's keeping his promises. He put a list out there before the election. So people had a chance to understand where he was coming from, and he won.
Let's talk about keeping those promises. One of the promises he made was to defend religious freedom, and I believe he has been doing that both domestically and from a foreign policy standpoint. And I know this is an issue that you care about. I testified before your committee before on the religious freedom issue. Last week, the Secretary of State holding the first ever ministerial to advance religious freedom. We've got an American being held now for close to 2 years in Turkey. There were some restrictions in the defense authorization bill, which is on its way to the president, restricts the sale of the fighter jets. Now, I know that's that also relates to the buying of military hardware from Russia. But the Senate has a has taken a bipartisan stand that Turkey needs to let him go.
Well, let's just say James Lankford's been a terrific voice for Pastor Brunson. Senator Tillis from North Carolina, I went over. I met with Erdogan about 3-4 weeks ago now. And I said, listen, you're a NATO ally. We got to get this behind us. Pastor Brunson, I saw him in jail in Izmir. And a couple weeks later, they let him out. He's at home now, but he's not in America. But he's at his home in Izmir, Turkey. And I appreciate that step. But he's a wonderful man, committed to his faith. He was a pastor of a church of about 50 to 60 people. He no more wanted to overthrow the government of Turkey, you know, than I could be in the NBA. So this has just been, he got caught up in something not of his making. He's been in jail way too long. He is not an enemy of the Turkish people or the state of Turkey. And it's just unfortunate that this has happened. But I remain optimistic. President Trump has had several talks. I talked to the ambassador this morning, and I said, we've got to get this issue behind us. The S-400, buying a Russian air defense system, is not being a good NATO member. We're not going to give you the F-35 and let the Russians see how the F-35 deals with the S-400. And so we got problems with Turkey, but I'm trying to push forward and maybe one day a free trade agreement. But I want to tell you, listeners who have prayed dutifully and passionately on behalf of Pastor Brunson, we're going to get a good outcome sooner rather than later.
So let me ask you, Senator Graham, in your meeting with the Turkish President Erdogan, what was your sense? Is he reasonable?
Yes, for the first time. I met this guy like 5 times, and you get a lecture about the world, but he just won. He's the dog who caught the car. The Turkish economy is now in the tank. They need a free trade agreement with the United States. I'd like to pull them away from Russia and Iran into our orbit. But I said, there are two things, Mr. President, we got to get behind us. Pastor Brunson and embassy personnel, not just Pastor Brunson. There's 7 or 8 Americans that were caught up in this. But what your listeners need to understand, 2 years ago, his military turned on him, and they actually bombed the parliament. So he's a pretty paranoid guy. He's gone too far, and Pastor Brunson is not an enemy of the Turkish people. He's not a Gulen supporter. And we made it real clear that none of us bought the idea that he's legitimately being held. And the last thing the Turkish president said to me is that we need to get this behind us. I thought we were there. Then something happened with the sanctions, and I'm afraid we're going back into a dark space now. But Pompeo has been terrific. He's going to meet with the Turkish foreign minister tomorrow in Singapore. I'm going to meet with President Trump Sunday, and we're going to see if we can find a way to get this behind us without taking the economies in a bad direction.
Let me ask you, Senator Graham, about that NATO relationship. I mean,
yes.
Turkey now cozying up to Russia.
Yep.
I mean, they're moving more toward a hardline Islamist government. Is that NATO alliance at risk?
Well, here's the way I look at it. It's the only Muslim country in NATO. Turkey has developed their economy pretty substantially. I've been going to Turkey for over 30 years. I was stationed in Turkey for a while when I was in the Air Force. And the economic prosperity in Turkey is being felt by the average Turk compared to the average Russian and Putin. Putin's Russia, he's stolen blind. Erdogan has gotten very much conservative when it comes to religion. He's cracking down on dissent and the independent media. But having said that, he is a NATO ally, and he told me without hesitation that he understands the best hope for his country to grow and prosper is to be aligned with the West, to be a contrarian, but also to be aligned with the West. He doesn't want ISIS to come back. Northeastern Syria, we got a good foothold. The Kurds have been helpful, but we got to assure Turkey that we're not going to allow northeastern Syria to become a safe haven for PKK types.
Mm-hmm. It does go both ways.
It goes both ways, and Erdogan's not beyond turning around here, but I worry. But Pompeo has been a champion on religious liberty.
Right.
You have to. You and Jay Sekulow, that hearing we had, and you're going to be surprised pleasantly, I think, about the money we're putting in the State Department budget to help religious minorities. We've heard your message, Tony. We've heard your plea, and I think we're reacting appropriately.
Well, thank you for coming on today, Senator, and thank you for taking up the calls or keeping up the calls of Pastor Brunson and
keep
religious
praying,
freedom.
I'm hopeful, but we're not going to let this go.
All right. Thanks so much. Senator Lindsey Graham, thanks for joining us.
To find out more about the Senator or Pastor Andrew Brunson, just head over to TonyPerkins.com and follow the links. Also, a quick reminder that your generous contributions to Family Research Council enable us to continue making these programs available, and you can donate when you visit TonyPerkins.com. We'll be right back with more Washington Watch right after this.
Did you know that 30% of all data transferred across the internet is porn? Although it is primarily viewed as a men's issue, today more and more women are indulging in adult entertainment, unaware of the devastating damage that it does to mind, body, and soul. As Christians, we are the community that can turn against the tide of pornography and renew our sexual culture. For more information on this issue, visit frc.org/women.
Welcome back to the weekend edition of Washington Watch. I'm David Salkeld. Churches and other nonprofit groups are struggling to make sense of a new levy imposed on a portion of their traditionally tax-exempt operations. Joining us now is Congressman Mike Johnson of Louisiana, who also serves on the House Judiciary Committee.
Mike, welcome back to Washington Watch.
Hey, Tony. Great to be with you.
Are your Democratic colleagues overstating the issue here of the GOP bringing down the IRS upon the churches through this 21% tax on parking benefits?
I think they are overstating it, and that's not a big surprise. I think they're trying to turn it into some sort of political wedge issue, but this truly is a bipartisan concern, and obviously conservative Republicans in the House were the first to raise the alarm, and we've already filed the legislation to correct it. I'm very optimistic that that will be done. We'll get it over the finish line here very shortly, and it will resolve the issue. So it's unfortunate, you know, that they're banging the drums about this when, you know, some of our liberal friends, some of the Democrats on the other side of the aisle have never really seemed all that concerned about what's happening with the tax-exempt status of our churches if you look at some of the other issues that affected them, and that's why all this is pretty interesting to us.
Now, I think in principle you would certainly agree whether it's a $5 we're talking about or $5,000, the principle is the same, that this appears to be the government reaching into the church for tax purposes. So I as you have pointed out, conservatives caught this and are working to fix it. But The issue of the IRS and the churches, there's a much bigger issue, and one that we've talked about here on this program many times, and one that you've actually worked to address in Congress along with the majority whip, Steve Scalise and Jody Heiss of Georgia, and that is the issue of the Johnson Amendment, where the IRS is limiting the speech potentially of churches.
They have been doing that. And look, here's the idea behind this, and you and I have discussed it many times, that repealing the Johnson Amendment has been a campaign commitment of President Trump and so many of us who ran for Congress. Prior to being elected to Congress in December 2016, I was a constitutional law attorney, as you know, used to litigate these cases. I worked for the Alliance Defending Freedom for much of my career, and we were defending the free speech and free exercise of religion all over the country, and those freedoms of churches as well. The Johnson Amendment has been a thorn in everyone's side, and the reason is, since 1954, since, you know, the amendment is named for Senator Lyndon B. Johnson, he inserted this amendment into a larger IRS bill that prohibited for the first time, he changed the Internal Revenue Code, for the first time in 1954, all nonprofits and churches were prohibited from engaging in any activity that might be interpreted by someone as, quote-unquote, participating in a campaign on or behalf of a candidate for public office. What it effectively has done since that time, Tony, as you well know, is that it's worked as sort of a censorship tool for the voice of the church. You have the IRS now positioned as a judge and jury over the activities of ministers and charities, all nonprofits. And it's created a real chilling effect on the free exercise of religion and the exercise of free speech. And that's a problem that we need to correct. And I hope our Democrat friends will be consistent, intellectually consistent here with their concern, and help us get this thing finally fixed.
So have you heard from them? Are they willing now, as they've now expressed the concern over the IRS and churches, are they willing to create that, re-erect, I should say, that constitutional firewall between the church and the IRS?
Well, one would hope. We've all left for the August district work period, so there hasn't been a lot of convocation on this issue yet. But I'll tell you, I'm very interested to get back the first week of September and pull some of my Democrat colleagues aside, some of those who have been the most vocal about this newly added section in the code regarding the de minimis fringe benefit of the parking and all that, to say, hey, I'm so glad that you're concerned about that. So are we. Now let's talk about the broader issue. You're worried about churches and nonprofits having to pay a few dollars for the fringe benefit of parking. Let's look at the big issue. I mean, the monster issue that their entire tax exempt status could be taken away, at least on paper, according to the Johnson Amendment, if they speak in the wrong manner, if they do something to address the moral and social concerns of the day, to talk about an upcoming political campaign, their entire tax-exempt status can be put in jeopardy. And surely, I would say to my Democrat friends, and intend to do so, surely you would not be in favor of that. So we'll see what they say, Tony.
Mike, in a McClatchy, Washington Bureau story on this topic from yesterday, one of your colleagues, Emmanuel Cleaver, who represents a district in Missouri, who is also a United Methodist pastor, making reference to the discovery of this tax issue, said, had we had hearings, and I'm quoting him, I can assure you I would have been testifying or screaming about this matter. So clearly, you know, I would think maybe they don't understand the threat that the IRS poses in terms of the Johnson Amendment, or why do we not see more Democratic members of Congress concerned about how the IRS is being used to silence pulpits?
It's a very good question, and I'm really not being flippant here at all, Tony, when I say that I've intend to go to Congressman Cleaver and others and talk with them about this in a very rational way. This, what we're talking about in repealing the Johnson Amendment should indeed be a bipartisan effort. I mean, this legislation is simply going to restore the free speech rights that have been unconstitutionally censored and silenced for more than 60 years by an amendment that is unconstitutional on its face. we would have had the Johnson Amendment struck down in the courts many years ago. But the Internal Revenue Service, the IRS, will never allow that legal challenge. We tried to spark that legal challenge, as you know, with Public Freedom Sunday activities for almost a decade now. We've mailed in sermons where pastors have violated that legislation on its face. And the IRS has never allowed us to have that challenge because they're afraid if we got in a federal court, clearly the First Amendment would trump this unconstitutional piece of legislation. So in the meantime, the Congress needs to do its job. The law should be made by the legislative body, and we ought to have a broad bipartisan consensus on this because exactly what he said. We have to protect this most cherished tradition, this American tradition of that goes back more than a century, to ensure that churches and other nonprofits are allowed to speak freely. It's an important part of who we are as Americans.
Well, I certainly would join them in rescinding this tax provision on churches and nonprofits, and I hope they will join with you in rescinding the Johnson Amendment, which is a much greater threat because of the muzzle that it potentially places on churches. Now, I do want to – we just got a couple minutes left, Congressman Johnson. I do want to point out that I think this is part of the problem of the legislative process currently, the massive size of pieces of legislation. We saw this back in the Obamacare where it was rushed through and only to discover all these problems afterwards. There are so many unintended consequences that we find from this. How do we fix that so we're more thorough in going through this legislation on the front side?
Well, process is a big part of it, and we've talked about that at great length, and in not having omnibus spending bills, for example, and not having legislation that's so large and complex that these unintended consequences can't be foreseen. But, you know, I'll say this in defense of the Tax Cuts and Jobs Act. It is a massive undertaking, obviously, to revise the Internal Revenue Code. Yeah. It's a job that was decades overdue. And I think the Ways and Means Committee and Chairman Brady and everyone who had a hand in the legislation did a masterful job. There's a few minor unintended consequences. We are going to fix them. But, you know, it's to be expected when you have legislation that large. As a general sense, right?
And it's working. And it's working. Mike, we're out of time. Thanks so much for joining us. It is working.
Well, unfortunately, that's all the time we have for today. I'm David Salkeld, thanking you for being with us, and I encourage you to be back here next week for the weekend edition of Washington Watch with Tony Perkins.
Washington Watch Weekend Edition is powered by the Family Research Council and is entirely listener-supported. For more information on anything you've heard today, or to find out how you can partner with us in our ongoing efforts to promote faith, family, and freedom, visit TonyPerkins.com. Also, to leave a comment about Washington Watch, call our watch line at 1-866-372-7234. That's 1-866-372-7234.